Well, hello and welcome to episode 164 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. And Michaela, going back to our childhood, we had some movies that were pretty monumental in terms of, shaping popular culture. And we already talked about one of those, and that was 1989's Batman. That really paved the way for what you could do with a comic book movie, what you could do in terms of merchandising, and what you could expect from a box office. And then just a year later, we had another film that really tried to follow in those same footsteps, but this was a movie that was a long time coming from the mind of Warren Beatty, and that is Dick Tracy.
That is correct. I don't know if you remember, but this movie came out. I think it came out in 1990 is when the film came out. But it was a late 1990 or maybe early 1991 where my parents had like a free weekend of HBO and it showed up. And not only did I get to see it, but I also got to see like the making of. And I remember this was the film that really opened my eyes to things like makeup, hairstyling, set direction, set design, because all of those things are it's a whole vibe, this movie. And you either love it or you hate it. I think it's very much one of the two. I don't think there's anybody in the middle of the road here. And it's just incredibly like outrageous and outrageously colored and outrageously done. And it was the brainchild of Warren Beatty, who had been wanting to do this. He'd had the rights for a while, and he'd been really wanting to do this for a long time, which was really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And yeah, going back to it, it's easy to remember, some of the more iconic stuff about Dick Tracy, right? The yellow hat, the yellow kind of like rain jacket that he wears. You remember Warren Beatty running around. You remember Madonna being in it, and just bringing Madonna to the big screen. You remember all of that stuff about it. You remember the marketing and things like that, but you almost forget just how like brilliantly conceived that it was. And we're going to talk about all of that stuff. We're going to talk about some reasons why it's a little bit like you said, Michaela, you either love this or hate this, but there are definitely some things here that are just monumentally like unbelievable. Even however long we are now, 30, 35 years almost, 34 years. So let's do this, Michaela. We're going to need a cocktail because there's a lot of Dick Tracy stuff we need to get through. We're going to need to fire up some Tommy guns. That's the theme of this week's cocktail. And we'll be right back to mix one of those up.
So this cocktail comes to us from Two Crumbs Up, which does this really fun
Good
take
name.
on
Good
like
name.
movies and cocktails or movies and food related things. You can like go and search. They have a whole slew of recipes that now I have to try with movies that I love. So go check them out. It's a really cool site. This is called the Tommy Gun Fizz. And again, we've talked about how polarizing this film is. People either really love it or really hate it. This Tommy Gun Fizz was dedicated to one of the bloggers' friends who this is their favorite movie. So that's really cool. I'm glad that we're able to recreate that drink here. The ingredients are actually really fun, and they're not that hard to find. So this is not going to be one of those esoteric 23 ingredient things. Anybody can enjoy this. This is going to be awesome, and I'm so excited.
That's right. This is a lot easier to put together than the set designers had to put together in Dick Tracy for sure. This is really good. It's a riff on a Jameson and ginger ale, which is by all accounts one of the most delicious drinks on the planet. This one gets jazzed up in all the right ways. So let's go ahead and make one of these, Michaela, into a shaker tin. Put in 1 teaspoon of apricot jam, a squeeze of lemon juice, roughly a teaspoon. I just took like a wedge of lemon and squeezed that in there for mine. We're going with 2 ounces of Irish whiskey, Jameson, if you will. Tullamore Dew is also a really nice one, or use whatever kind of Irish whiskey you want. You could also use a bourbon or like a blended scotch if you wanted to change it up a little bit there. Half ounce of Grand Marnier or Triple Sec, and then you're going to go ahead and shake that with some ice. And you want to shake it up really vigorously, to get that jam to kind of break up and dissolve as much as it's going to in your cocktail there. And then go ahead and strain that into an ice-filled like highball glass, and then top it off with some ginger beer and a lemon twist. You are good to go then. So it's just a little bit of a jazzy riff, Breathless Mahoney type riff on the old Jameson and ginger ale. But what did you think about the additions here, Michaela?
I loved it. So I'm not a huge fan of apricot. I was a little concerned that it would be almost too fruity. I don't know how I felt about a teaspoon. I thought that might be too much. It was perfect. I recommend getting a jelly, something that doesn't have seeds in it, if
The
that's going to
seeds,
bother you. And you definitely want to shake it a lot. I've made more than one of these, surprisingly enough. And the first one didn't shake it enough, and I regretted it later because it just kind of fell into the bottom and it didn't mix well. So make sure you shake it a lot. Also, not all ginger beers are created equal. One of the first things that I asked Brian when we were talking about this cocktail was which ginger beer he used, because you want to find one that is going to hit where you want it to hit. So if you love something super ginger forward, you can go and get one of those esoteric ones. If you like a Schweppes ginger beer, you can do that. I don't love too much ginger. So I used Fever Tree has a ginger beer that is not super gingery. It's just ginger enough for me, and I
It's
really
pretty
liked it.
mild,
So
yeah.
yeah, so that's what I did. But this gives you an opportunity to play with it a little bit. If you really like a lot of ginger, go for it.
Exactly. And this one is kind of sweet enough from the jam and the addition of the whiskey and the Grand Marnier there that it can stand up to a spicier ginger beer. So I used a Q, well, a Q tonic, a Q sodas. They have a new ginger beer out on the market. I think it's called like Bold and Spicy or Bold and something. I don't know. It's called something, but it was very spicy. It was really delicious for this one. But yeah, use whatever you want. And if apricot jam is not your jam, or if you don't have any of that, maybe you're a PB&J family, so you've got like some strawberry jelly, go ahead and use that instead. You could probably use any sort of jam that you wanted to, and get yourself a nice little riff on this, easy enough to swap that in or out. Maybe we'll have to do that. We'll have to do a Tommy Gunn fizz like flight, Michaela, and see if we can
Ooh.
notice the difference. That sounds like a pretty good time to me, pretty good time to me. But you know what else would be a good time, Michaela? That would be mixing up a couple more of these, taking a quick break, watching Dick Tracy and coming back so we can chat all about the things, all about the things at Dick Tracy. So let's do that. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to chat about this week's film.
Spoiler warning for Dick Tracy. If you've not yet seen this film, you've had 34 years. So sorry, not sorry, number one. And number two, so we're going to talk about all the things. So you've been warned. If you've not seen it, I strongly recommend pressing pause, going and making yourself a Tommy Gunn fizz, finding Dick Tracy. I think right now you can rent it for like anywhere you can rent films. And you should come back and then we can chat about it because there's some bigs. You know, kind of twists and turns at the end, and we want to talk about all of it. So you've been warned.
That's right. Yeah, all good detective stories are going to have some twists, and Dick Tracy is no different there in that sense. This was released in 1990. It was directed by and stars Warren Beatty as our yellow-adorned detective, Dick Tracy. Glenn Headley is his true love, Tess Trueheart. Madonna is the lounge singer slash temptress slash hero villain, Breathless Mahoney, and Al Pacino is the new crime king, Big Boy Caprice. Charlie Corsmo plays the kid who's going to be getting kind of in and out of trouble throughout the film. And there's like 50 other people, A-list celebrities that are in here to wear a bunch of makeup in this film to bring this
Just,
cast of characters to life. It's pretty wild. It is
yeah,
pretty wild.
just gobs of prosthetics being used. I love, like, even the first like 5 minutes, you see like 16 characters that look nothing like their real selves. And it's based on a comic book, right? So
That's right.
I and I've read maybe, I don't know, 3 pages of these comics, so bear with me. But I think it's kind of playing with the idea that every mobster has a nickname and it's based on something physical about them. So they've got it's we've got like Prune Face, which is like a normal guy who looks like the face of a prune. He's like super wrinkly. There's like Little Face, who's got this head that looks like a giant Easter egg and like a teeny tiny little face. And like all these
Right.
people are like flat top, and everybody's kind of got this over caricature realization of themselves as mobsters, and it's so cool. I just love it so much, and it I mean it's very overdone, but it's supposed to be like I love it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely, definitely like satirical on like mobsters in the like 1920s mobsters, which
Yeah.
makes sense because Dick Tracy started, of course, as a comic strip. It was created by Chester Gould, and it made its debut in the 1931 the Detroit Mirror newspaper there, and then quickly got very popular. Dick Tracy did, so they started doing radio shows of it in 1934 up through to the 1950s. And in fact, like the latest iterations, like 1945 to 1950, Bing Crosby was Dick Tracy there doing the voice of that there on the radio show. And then there were comic books, of course. There were film like serial shorts, like before movies, you'd see these Dick Tracy film shorts. And then there were some feature films in 1945, 46, 47. There was a very popular live action TV show in 1950 and 51. There were animated cartoon shows. And then finally, in 1990, the feature film came out that we're talking about today. Warren Beatty was always keen on getting this made. I think he bought the rights to Dick Tracy in like 1985. So it had been a long time coming. He really wanted to get this thing put together. And the studios finally pulled the trigger on the old Tommy gun for Dick Tracy to make his shot. Michaela, were you familiar with Dick Tracy at all? It seems like I remember like when Dick Tracy the movie was coming out, like Dick Tracy seemed like something that everyone kind of knew of, but didn't really know a lot about.
He kind of reminded me of like the Andy Capp of like a crime version of Andy Capp. Because growing up, a lot of people read Andy Capp comics that were kind of similar. They were only on Sunday papers and then they turned into like a big thing. And it was kind of this detective pop-up crime thing. So I remember that. But not, I didn't know any of the characters, and all of the characters in this film are based, like all the mobsters are based on real characters that were in the comics. So I did not, wasn't into that. But like the marketing around this was super colorful. It was really aimed towards children. I felt very much like this was going to be a kid's movie. I remember thinking that it was supposed to be a kid's movie, and then as an adult now watching it, I'm like, I don't know if I really believe that or not.
That
Ooh.
explains a lot about us, Michaela, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it was definitely marketed as a kid's movie. There was like a big McDonald's promotion. I remember like you couldn't go anywhere. Like I even remember I had just one of like the Dick Tracy like t-shirts that's kind of, that like silhouette, that's a hard contrast, like yellow and black silhouettes of Dick Tracy. I had that t-shirt. You couldn't I always wanted one of Dick Tracy's watches because Dick Tracy's watch is the coolest watch. For sure. I never got one, but I always wanted one. But yeah, this was definitely geared at kids, and it was following up, kind of the success that Batman had had. It was like this whole like wave of things that were gonna start coming, and Dick Tracy did pretty well. It made a fair bit of money, and it really was pretty much critically acclaimed, even though kind of the reviews for it were a little spotty. The Academy Award said, "Dick Tracy, you know what you're doing. Let's give you some awards." So it won some awards. Michaela, it won Best Makeup, Best Art Direction and Set Decoration, Best Original Song for "Sooner or Later, I Always Get My Man" by Stephen Sondheim, and performed by Madonna, of course, there. And it was also nominated for Best Sound, Best Costume Design, Best Cinematography, and a Supporting Actor nod for Al Pacino. So a pretty good Oscar night for Dick Tracy.
Really outlandish. Like this was satire on satire, I feel like. And when we talk about the film like opening up, the art direction and the way they depict the city is probably one of the most amazing ways that I've seen that done, certainly from a comic book perspective, ever in my life. And I remember being really taken aback by it as a child. And as an adult, I was just completely in awe because even though this is 34 years old, it still looks brilliant. It looks like it's coming right out at you from a comic book and it's gorgeous. I have no idea how they did it, but it's amazing the way that they have like cars and things that are moving in a frame where it also looks like it is just a comic book setting and it's been drawn on somehow. So cool.
Yeah, it is really cool, and you're kind of getting that feeling straight away. It's showing the city, and yeah, there's a particular shot just at the very beginning of the film where the car is kind of moving through this part of the background, and then it shows up, and it transfers over to this other part of the background, and it's really unbelievable. Let's get into the movie a little bit here, Michaela. You mentioned kind of this whole like gallery of villains here that have, there's like what is it, like Little Face, Small Face, Tiny Face, I don't know, something. You have all of these characters are sitting around. playing cards. You got this kid coming in who's being chased into this kind of back alley poker game that's going on, and he goes in there, and quickly we are going to be introduced to kind of the setup for the story. All of these mobsters, all of this, I don't know, like 1,000 hours of makeup being put to work, just instantly Tommy gunned down at this poker game, and you know, probably kind of the most I guess like iconic sort of imagery you get from Dick Tracy. They come in, Tommy guns blaring, spell out Dick Tracy on the wall, and then it cuts to our hero at the play. Really, really cool shot.
No, it's amazing. This whole, like, at the very beginning, it was like this kid walks in on this deal, and afterwards, you know that he's going to be like in the center of this kind of conspiracy to take over the town, and you don't even know what town it is. I think it's supposed to be like a New York or I don't know, a Los Angeles, but it's
Dick
really
Tracyville.
gritty. It's Dick Tracyville. Is that really what it's called?
I don't know. I don't know.
No,
Well,
but
it was in the Detroit newspaper. It does not give me super big vibes of Detroit.
it's too
Very kind
colorful. It's
of
too,
New York-esque, or maybe Chicago-esque, right? If we're playing
yeah.
off of these gangsters, I immediately go to Chicago. And maybe
Yeah.
that's what it's meant to be, but it's this big, huge kind of landscape of high-rise towers and seedy nightclubs.
And they're all painted. Like, I love, like, even the shot of Tracy leaving his house, right? They show him picking up his hat, putting on his coat, his overcoat, and it's all yellow. And then he's leaving his house, and like his house is painted red. The house next to him is bright blue. The house next to that is like bright yellow. It is like Technicolor on crack. It is so colorful, and it is so ridiculous because no one wears an all yellow suit, no one wears an all green suit, no one wears an all blue suit. And yet, the very next scene, we're in this club with this giant mouth face thing like sucking down oysters like
Yeah.
they're, I don't know, yeah, it's so
Lips.
gross.
Yeah,
Oh my gosh,
his
yeah,
name is
lips
Lips.
manless.
He's played by Paul Sorvino. Yeah, we go to this nightclub. We see we're not introduced to yet, but we see Breathless Mahoney, played by Madonna there. She is given a pretty stirring performance, I will say. And Lips is sitting there pounding down about 5,000 raw oysters. I like he's just like picking them up, slurping them down, and they're like bringing him like new plates of them, like as he's going, like he doesn't even like stop for air. And eventually, you know, Breathless Mahoney comes over to him because I guess, you know, she's the lady on Lips's arm there. But Lips is gonna have a bit of a bad luck, right? Because the police come in, they say, "This is a raid, you need to come with us." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And they go out, but it's not really the police at all. It is really our big bad of this, right? It is Alphonse Big Boy Caprice's guys. It's like Flat Top and someone else, I don't remember
Itchy,
the other one's name.
itchy.
Itchy, that's right. They throw him in the car there, and Lips is about to have a real bad time. And the way Lips meets his untimely fate, I'm pretty sure it gave me nightmares for a long time. Okay, well, this is a movie for kids, PG, apparently. But why don't I you need a bath, Michaela, is what he's told.
Yep, you need a bath, which is basically what is actually a cement overcoat. And if you don't know what that is, it's I guess they put him in a crate and they cover him with cement, which is terrifying enough because that's a chemical reaction that's happening all over your body. But then they dunk him in a river. And so if the cement doesn't kill him, which it absolutely will in a probably really terrifying and painful way, he's also going to drown. Really awful, actually. I totally agree. The worst part is that they call it a bath, which is something that you're supposed to want to do at least once a week as a child. Not good, not good. And not good for Lips Manless because he's like begging and oh, it's like this gritty, like the way they create the cement is all chunky and it's like oatmeal looking and it just looks super gross.
It does.
And so he takes his bath, but not before he signs over his club to Big Boy, which is Club Ritz. And that's where Breathless Mahoney is singing. And he's like, Big Boy's like, you're mine now. And she doesn't seem to like that, but she also doesn't do anything about it because she doesn't want to take a bath either. Like,
She doesn't want to have her own bath. Yeah, I do really like kind of the scene here. It's showcasing Al Pacino at this, and he's just screaming it out into the void, right? That everything that Lips owned belongs to me now, or all of Lips' territory is mine now. Everyone that worked for Lips works for me now, and everything that Lips owned, I own now. And that's about the time he grabs Breathless Mahoney and they go off back to his club, right? Dick Tracy is going to be called into the scene. I really like kind of our introduction to Dick Tracy here. It's a like this really cool shot of kind of behind him and Tess are sitting at this play opera sort of thing, and he's sitting there and it's he gets a little call on his watch that's really really cool, and he gets sent off and he's like, let me know how it ends, I want to know how it ends, and he goes off and he goes to where all of these poker players got gunned down, and he sees on the wall it's riddled out there in bullets, it says Dick Tracy on there, which is pretty ominous. If your name is Dick Tracy, that your name gets shot into the wall by these mobsters, that's bad, that's bad. But they need to go figure out who's at the bottom of this. So they're off to look for Lips, but can't find Lips because he's at the bottom of the river. But he does find an earring, which is going to give him a bit of a lead.
And what a beautiful earring it is. And so we got to talk about the scene where he's it's before Dick Tracy ends up going to the club, but Big Boy is like re-leading, or they're rehearsing another number that Breathless is doing with her girl gang, right? And he's just doing what Al Pacino does so well, which is screaming and throwing a giant tantrum about how it's not good. He doesn't like
He's
it.
doing
He
some
wants
awesome
more.
dances
He's
around.
trying to dance with them. He's smacking them. He's like telling them that they suck. It's amazing. And she's just trying to sing. And I gotta believe that this probably took a few takes to do. And she looks just as annoyed the entire time. Madonna's not known for her acting skills, but I really like this part because she's got to be holding it in. And as an adult, kind of knowing where this is going to go, I found this to be the part where she really feels the spark of, hey, I can't actually deal with this forever. Like,
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do something about this. I don't know how I'm going to get out of it because this guy will certainly kill me after he tells me that I'm the most amazing thing ever, and he's going to cover me with concrete and I'm going to die. So I really love this scene because you've got 88 Keys, who's a piano guy, who's like totally in love with Breathless, as you're supposed to be, because she's this wanton vixen, right? She's like this totally sensual looking person. And
Yeah.
Big Boy is just
88
like,
Keys,
whatever, 88 Keys.
played by Mandy Patinkin,
Yes,
there.
absolutely. And he's so soft. Like, he's playing this and he's trying to like tell Big Boy that the girls are tired and this isn't working, and he almost breaks his hand. And that's when Breathless stands up to him, and she's like, look, you're being really stupid. He's the best piano player in town. Like, you want to run the club, you got to not hurt the people that are going to make the money for you. And he's like, it's all mine, everything is mine, and I get to decide. Rah, I'll cut off his fingers, it'll be great.
You say that Madonna is not known for acting. Should be, because she's excellent in this. She's also excellent in A League of Their
She
Own,
is.
another Drink to Movies film that we've covered here. But yeah, she definitely has that look about her that Madonna, the person, had been in those instances where it's 2 a.m. and some fool that doesn't know what he's talking about is trying to tell her what to do. She
Yep.
seemed like she'd probably been in rooms like that
Been
for
there
sure.
before, yep.
Yeah, so that's what we got. Big Boy, he's starting to take over this territory, take over the town a little bit. Let's check back in with Dick Tracy. He is finishing his date with Tess. Very lovely. It's I guess a long running thing that Dick and Tess never seem to quite get married, or kind of hit it off. But they're having a nice time on this date. They're outside of this diner. The door opens up, smashes Dick Tracy in the face, and out comes this kid is running off who stole this watch. Maybe my favorite scene in the whole movie is Dick Tracy finally catches up with this kid. He's at this little shack with I don't know, is this caretaker guy, I guess. He's probably the one. He's just giving him some room and board if he goes out and steals stuff for him. But Dick Tracy kind of opens the door and he's like, we don't take kindly to people that hit kids or something like that. And he ends up fighting this guy, and it pulls back outside of the shack, and the shack is just shaking back and forth as he's beating him up, and he eventually, knocks him outside, and then the whole entire shack falls down, which is really great. But now we have a new character on our hands here. Kid, what are we going to do about this kid?
We're gonna feed him. We're gonna feed him all the food.
All the food.
I love that this whole film, they're just like continuing to feed him, and he's hungry all the time. And when I was young, I didn't realize how special that is, because they give him anything he wants as long as it's food. He's like, "What do we eat?" And they just continue to feed him because he's starving. He literally, it's what got him into trouble in the first place, is he was eating a sandwich out of a trash can when he kind of stumbled onto this game where everybody gets shot up, right? So he is this witness. Dick Tracy and Tess are like, "What are we gonna do with him?" And he's like, "Well, I gotta go to work. Do you think you could watch him?" And she's like, "Watch him do what?" And it's like, "Just keep feeding him ice cream. It'll be fine." But they feed him with the intent that at some point they're gonna have to call an orphanage. They're gonna have to call, like, kid services, child services, or whatever, and get him looked at. But he really doesn't want to do that. Apparently, the food in the orphanage is not good, and he doesn't like it.
Doesn't like that food, doesn't like that food. And yeah, I like Kid here. He's played by Charlie Corsmo throughout the film. A lot of times in movies like this, when you have a kid, he's kind of wisecracking but kind of annoying. But Kid here in this one seems a little bit pretty smart, right? He's sitting there at dinner with Tess. He takes the money off the table and she asks him if he wants a broken arm, so he kind of throws it back. And he's given shtick, but he's also taken shtick. He's pretty good. I like Kid in this a lot, and Dick Tracy's gonna like him a whole lot because he's gonna come in handy for saving his neck a time or two. Dick Tracy, as I mentioned, he found that earring. He kind of knows what's going on, so he's going to pay a visit to that nightclub. Michaela, he's still looking for what's his name, Lips. But Lips is dead, and now he finds out that Big Boy Caprice has taken over his club. That seems pretty sudden. That seems pretty sudden. And he sees the matching earring hanging there on Breathless Mahoney. So that's going to be the one he needs to really kind of pin down to get her to come testify, to tell him what's up. And he's going to have an opportunity to confront her back in her changing room.
Yeah, and this is where we need to talk
This is
about the
rated
PG
PG.
rating.
This is
Okay,
rated PG.
so
Parental guidance, I
I
guess
yeah
you were the guide.
and as a good parent, I like to say that I did look this up, because I remember being 9 or 10 and certain scenes with Madonna and falling in love with her, as everybody kind of was thinking maybe Dick Tracy would as well, because she's very, very sexy and wearing very tight clothing. But I couldn't remember everything. So I went on to the parental guide and I looked, and not once does it say that we see Madonna naked. And
She's not naked.
so
She's
I'm
wearing
literally
it's
watching.
she's wearing
Yeah,
a
okay.
something.
Right. She's wearing something that is so thin. You see completely through it. And that's fine. Hey, that's fine. It was the almost the 80s. It was just the end of the 80s, right? When this came out. So I will say, I started to watch this with my son. We get to that scene and he turns to me and he says, "Mama, I don't think this is for me." And he walks out of the room. And I was like, "You're good on you, kid." 'Cause I was like, "Wow, this is amazing." So yes, she is really trying to tempt him, and you don't really know why. All of a sudden, she's—I mean, you don't know if she's just like, "Hey, I need you to help me with this guy that I don't want to be with," or if she's got something more nefarious planned. But she keeps trying to tempt him to do whatever, and he's like, "Look, I just really need you to testify." And she's like, "That's not how this works." And then he's like, "Nice earring." And she realizes that she is the only witness to this crime that happened, where Lips Manless was killed, right? She had to have been there when it happened. So there's this very interesting, like, quid tit for tat kind of quid pro quo that happens between the two of them over the course of the film, where he really wants her to testify, and she's like, "I'll testify if you, I don't know, tell me you want me." And he's like, "I do, but I don't." And he's tempted, but he doesn't. And it's great. But it's I don't know if it's really PG. That's all I'm
Yeah,
saying.
for sure. Love that. Just gets up and walks out. Good on you, kid. Good on you, kid. Yeah, and it seems like kind of the crux of this city, right? If you're running around with the crime family here, if you're Breathless Mahoney, really the keys to controlling the city is the key you need to control Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy is kind of the super cop for the city, so kind of the bulk of the movie is just the mob trying to figure out how to get Dick Tracy down, right? To get him thrown off the force or put on suspension, or everyone's wanting him to be the chief of police, which Dick Tracy keeps calling a desk job. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to keep being out there in the mean streets, tracking people down. But eventually, he is going to get cornered a little bit here. He's biting off a little bit more than he can chew with this, right? Some of the police are corrupt. That's bad news. That's bad news. And he's going to end up having a little meeting with Big Boy Caprice and all of his henchmen there, which doesn't go very well for Dick Tracy, I will say. He ends up getting an offer, right? He gets offered to basically, turn a blind eye to what we're doing. I'm going to give you $15,000, which would have been a lot of money, to go ahead, just, let us do our thing. You don't pay attention to us, and we won't pay attention to you. Here's $15,000. But Dick Tracy, can't stand for that. Throws the money back in his face, and of course, Big Boy Caprice has another little blow up. Al Pacino is really good at having blow ups in this movie, I will say. And that's going to be the end of Dick Tracy, we think. They think for sure. Tie him to a chair, set the boilers up to maximum pressure, which seems bad. This movie has so many great kind of set designs, and the way that they're like painting stuff and like real world stuff is interacting with it, and it's all lighting up. But the practical effects of like this stuff, and especially the gears kind of at the end of the film, we'll talk about here in just a minute. But like these boilers are just going absolutely nuts behind them. It's so colorful, it's so vibrant, and it's so like visceral feeling to it. It's like a comic book comes to life, and it's bad news for Dick Tracy because you're about to be blown to smithereens.
But there's a kid who can't stop getting in back of cars. And it's a good thing that he did because he has followed Dick Tracy and this group of folks to do this, right? And he's hanging out outside and he sees that they've left him and they've tied him up. And this kid, he had gotten a baseball and a glove on a day out, as you know, they're stuffing him with ice cream and donuts and all sorts of things. And he uses the baseball to open the window and he gets inside and helps Dick Tracy escape, which is great. They get out in the nick of time. It totally blows up Tess's house because it's in the basement of her building. And yet we see Tess later in another house. So I don't know what happened there, but
Bad luck,
it
Tess.
ends up being okay. We gotta love Tess. Tess doesn't even seem all that worried. She's like, huh, yeah, well, you know, it's what happens when you're dating Dick Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, Tess is going to seem a little bit worried because after, our first, confrontation there between Dick Tracy and Breathless Mahoney, Breathless decides she's going to pay Dick Tracy a couple more visits. I love this one because she goes in to, like, I don't know, like turn herself in or to talk to him at the police station when she basically, tells him, that she's not going to testify again. She brings her own bottle of champagne with her. That's amazing. I love that so much. She tries to play temptress again. Dick Tracy is not biting. But when she turns up at his apartment later, or at Tess's apartment, I don't know, one of their apartments, she's there, and they're having a wee bit of a chat. Dick Tracy gives in to temptation for just a moment. Gives a bit of a kiss, and Tess is not going to take too kindly to that. Who would, I guess, in fairness? And Tess says, "I'm going to get out of town." But I do really like in the boiler scene, to go back to that for just a second, because you have Kid there, who breaks in and saves Dick Tracy. But I love it because he's watching from the window and he sees Dick Tracy take this pile of money. And Kid is from the streets. He's seen all of these adults do the wrong thing all the time. That's the world that he lives in. So when he sees Dick Tracy throw that money back in his face, he gives a little fist pump, a little yeah, and he's like, maybe all adults aren't the worst of all time.
Right. Yeah. Maybe they're not all terrible. And they love at the end of that scene where they're like outside, breathing deep, breathing heavy after this explosion. The kid's like, man, Tracy, that was a lot of money. And he's like, you're all right, kid. Thanks so much. And because of that, they also give the kid like this honorary detective kind of certificate, right? That, you know, because he saved Dick Tracy's life. And all he has to do is pick a name because the kid or kid is not a name. And so it's all this kind of familial stuff that starts to happen because Dick Tracy and Tess kind of take the child, the kid under their wing. They start to kind of make this makeshift family sort of thing. Kid really does not want to go to the orphanage. He'll do anything to not do that. But then he actually ends up saving Dick Tracy's life, and Dick seems to really start caring about this kid. One of my favorite scenes is after Tess leaves, she skedaddles out of town, and Tracy is kind of sitting at this bar. That's a diner. It's not like a bar, and the kids sit next to him, and he's like, "Hey, do you want a donut?" And, like, the kid's like trying to cheer him up like a friend. And then he says, "Yeah, I'll have a cup of coffee, sure." And the kid's like, "I'll have one too." And they're just kind of two peas in a pod. They kind of look similar, and except Dick Tracy's in yellow and kids in like this bright red, and they look like, I don't know, hot dog condiments. It's amazing. I love the scene so much because he can tell, the kid can tell that Tracy's upset, and Tracy can tell that the kid is upset because the kid doesn't want to go to the orphanage. And every day they're like, we're hiding you out from the orphanage lady who keeps coming looking for you. So I really like that scene. That was cool.
That's right. Absolutely, absolutely. To get back to our mob story here, so Big Boy Caprice has kind of a bit of an idea, in a scene that's very reminiscent of the Dark Knight film there, where all the crime families are there, kind of at this long dining table sort of a thing. And Big Boy is kind of laying out his vision for the city, right? Basically wants to turn it into some sort of like a mafia type organization, right? Everyone, buys a sandwich, we get a nickel. Everyone gets their haircut, we get 10 cents. That sounds good to him. That sounds good to most people. But he gets a little bit of pushback from Spud Spaldoni, who's played by James Caan. James Caan's in this movie for like 4 seconds, because everyone's in this movie. He doesn't want to go along with the plan, and that's going to really rub Big Boy Caprice the wrong way, right? He kind of opened his arms to the rest of the crime family and said, I can lead us through this. We'll make all sorts of money and get spurned, and that's going to be bad. So now he really needs to turn his attention on getting Dick Tracy out of there so he can get rid of the rest of these crime bosses and sort of take over the city just for himself, right? No more playing nice with the other mob bosses. This is all in for him. So he's going to have to try to get some help. And there is someone that is willing to help. Michaela, we're introduced to another new character, No Face, who shows up in the shadows. This shadowy figure with no face, which is a very literal name here, is in a movie of literal names. And No Face is going to offer to help, right? No Face can bring in Dick Tracy, no questions asked. You just can't know who I am. That's the only stipulation here.
Yep. And I love this because I guess they're also called the blank.
Yeah, the blank, not no face, the blank.
I mean, to be
Strike that.
fair,
Strike all
Dick
that I just
Tracy's like,
said.
he has no face. I don't know what to tell you. He has no face. And so they're like, they're sketching him out, and it's like, just put a guy with no face. That's what he looks like. No Face has kind of cornered 88 Keys, which is the piano player, and in this really awful, like, I don't know, synthetic voices like, "I want you to do something to Dick Tracy. I need you to take his message to Big Boy." And 88 Keys does it. And at first, Big Boy's like, "I don't believe this guy. You can't find him. You don't know who he is. I don't know what's going on. I'm not taking this seriously at all. We're absolutely not gonna give this any credence." But it's a pretty tempting offer. And so Big Boy is getting more and more desperate, and he finally succumbs to the temptation of using No Face or the blank as an offer to go ahead and get rid of Dick Tracy.
Yeah, and getting Dick Tracy out of the picture is the A number one priority here. And the blank has a bit of a scheme, right? Tess comes back to town. Maybe she's like, I saw you kissing that lady, but it was Madonna, so fair, I guess. So she's going to let bygones be bygones there. She shows back up the city, and the blank has this great idea. It's like, I'm gonna frame Dick Tracy for doing this bad stuff, and then I'm also going to kidnap Tess, and that I can frame Big Boy Caprice for that, and then Dick Tracy is out of the way. Big Boy Caprice is out of the way. I can take over the city. I just gotta make this kidnapping, pin it on Big Boy, and all will be good to go. But Big Boy is going to not fall for this plan, hook, line, and sinker. He kind of figures out that he's getting set up here in this. So he ends up with a Tess under his stead. I really like they're on like some like weird like mine car kind of thing, like that leads out of like the back, like through the wine room. I don't you have a pretty sweet wine cellar if you have like a whole like rail car coming into it. It's probably, I guess, how they got booze in, you know, during Prohibition. That makes
Yes.
sense.
Yeah.
That
That
looks
makes, yeah.
really cool. That's a really cool scene. And he's with Tess, but you know, Dick Tracy is also not one to be trifled with. He's able to you know, to put things, you know, the right way, gets the I guess the rest of the police force on his side there, that he's not really guilty of these things. So they let him out, kind of coming to a full head, right? So we've got Blank here, who has set this plan in motion. We've got Big Boy Caprice, who now has Tess. He's got a little bit of a bargaining chip with Dick Tracy, and Dick Tracy is back out on the hunt for well, to rescue Tess, of course, but you know, to get Big Boy Caprice behind bars and to figure out who this mysterious Blank figure is.
Yeah. And we have this final kind of final moment really between Dick Tracy and Breathless, right? But when he's going and looking for her, for Tess, and Breathless is in the club and she says, oh, he took her through the wine room. And there was a scene earlier where she basically calls him out and says, look, I want you to tell me that you want me, that you want all of this, that you want all of me, and you don't want the other girl, you don't want Tess. And he can't do it because he's like, look, it's not that I don't think of you. And this is what I think I really love, right? He's like, it's not that I don't think of you, and it's not that I don't want you, but I love this other person. And
There's
it's
a yeah, there's a really great line from Dick Tracy there when Breathless Mahoney shows up at his apartment, and she takes the picture of Tess that he has there, like on the shelf or whatever, and she says, "Oh, she's really pretty," and Dick Tracy says, "She's a lot more than that." Love it.
yeah, because she's one in a million, like, right? He tells her that a couple of times. And I really like that because you look with the way that Breathless Mahoney looks in this film, I think anybody that is interested in women at all is probably at least a little interested and a little tempted. And we talked about this a lot in other films, right? It's not the temptation that's the issue here. It's what you do with that temptation. And I really love that Dick Tracy, he doesn't even tell her, he has a way of explaining to her in one simple three words. He's like, I love her. I'm not doing this because I love her. It has nothing to do with you. You know, it's that. And so at the end, you think that there's going to be this moment where Dick Tracy has to decide if he's going to believe Breathless as she tells him where Big Boy led Tess off to. And they have kind of this moment where she tells him good luck and she like lets him go. And I think that's really great. And so he ends up going with, I don't know how, if there's another car that he like follows him through the tunnel with or whatever, but they end up in this like watch, like this clockwork place where there's all these gears. That is one of the coolest like showdown scenes I've ever seen in my life. It's so great. It's very reminiscent to me of 1989's Batman, where they're at the very top of this clock tower building. Very similar to that. They have this water can that is being crushed, and you think it's going to be Tess's head that's next in the gears because she's like tied up in this thing of gears. And Big Boy is just doing the Al Pacino thing where he's screaming that everything's going to be fine. He's telling Tess that he loves her and that he would never have kidnapped her, but then he's going to crush her skull if she doesn't, you know, tell everybody that he didn't mean to hurt her. And it's very strange, and he's completely unhinged, and he's amazing.
That's right. Yeah, he's they're there. I think it's like the drawbridge, like control center there. It's why they have the big gears. And yeah, Dick Tracy figures out that they went off on this rail car, so he goes to intercept, and they have kind of a final showdown. And it seems like Dick Tracy is about to meet his end when the Blank turns back up and is able to get rid of Big Boy Caprice, but not before being dispatched of themself there, the Blank. So laying there, you know, having saved Dick Tracy, Dick Tracy's going to go over and take off that mask and figure out that Breathless Mahoney was the Blank all the time, was trying to play kind of both sides and see if Breathless could be the one taking over the city. And I kind of love that, right? She's this performer, she's this like lounge act kind of thing for this thing, for all these mob guys who are treating her like a piece of property. And she's like, nah, I can get one up on all you idiots and take over this town. But unfortunately, stray bullets leaves her there, unable to do that. Does get another kiss in with Dick Tracy, so that's good. Two kisses for Dick and Breathless Mahoney there before she perils there, and all is well that ends well. The charges get dropped from Dick Tracy, and Tess is back, and Dick's in her good graces now again finally, and the whole crew is there at that diner again, hanging out, and about getting to the point where Dick Tracy is finally to ready to settle down to reveal his true love, to make that proposal. But wouldn't you know it, that watch goes off and she tells him, "Go on, get out of here." He tosses her a ring, and Dick Tracy Jr. are on the case.
That's right. It's so good because he says the same thing like three times throughout the film, where he's like, you live alone, I live alone, we have a lot in common, and she's not falling for it at all. She's like, I like living alone, you like living alone, we do have a lot in common. What about it? Like, she's not, but at the same time, she like really wants him to ask her, and that's why she's so hurt when she sees that he is kind of having this kissy moment in her apartment or in his apartment or whatever, and kind of runs away to go talk to her mom as she's baking her cookies, telling her, it's really hard to love a man like that. It takes a lot of understanding. And I really like it because at the end he just says the same thing he does, which is, you're one in a million. She slips the ring on her finger. He doesn't ask the question. She's just smiling, and it's so great. And then the kid and, I guess, Dick Tracy Jr., because that's what he decides he wants to be called, they kind of run off into the street together, and it's like a Batman Robin scenario, but in my opinion, way cooler, definitely way brighter colored. And you have that beautiful like starlit kind of sky on the back end. I mean, the direction of how they do the kind of broader landscape scenes of the city are just amazing to me. They're just so cool. And something that I think it ages so beautifully. It looks just as good as it did in 1990 when it came out.
Yeah, for a little bit of context, if you've never seen this film, if you're familiar with like newer films, it'd be like if Wes Anderson directed some sort of like crime noir sort of thing, kind of the way that it looks, right? It kind of looks like that, and it's so like super saturated with colors. I love all of like the mob guys, have their own kind of signature color, right? So Big Boy Caprice is always wearing like this like kind of like bluish purplish suit. So then when they show up at the to go into the like courthouse or to go out on their little Tommy gun raid, they all get into cars that are like the exact same color as the costume that they're wearing, and it's just so bright and vibrant and just really like such like a design choice for it. It's really kind of unbelievable, the amount of care and effort that went into it. And it was a pretty expensive movie to make, but ended up doing pretty well. There was always intentions, I guess, to make a sequel. Warren Beatty freaking loves Dick Tracy. I think he must have grown up reading those comics left, right, and center, but didn't ever get a sequel. There was a bit of a legal battle over who owned the rights to Dick Tracy. Warren Beatty purchased those in 1985, but there was a bit of a squabble if he'd maintained that ownership to it or not, and he ended up actually suing the other company in the 2005, and they said, yeah, Warren Beatty does in fact own the rights to this, and he's popped up a couple of times to do like little Dick Tracy things, almost more recognizable as Dick Tracy now than Warren Beatty in some instances. And we talked about the marketing a little bit for this, Michaela. There were three soundtracks to this as well, which is kind of interesting. So you had the official like score soundtrack that I think Danny Elfman did. You have there's kind of like a popular music kind of soundtrack that they put together for this, and then Madonna's album that year was Dick Tracy themed. It came out in tie-in to the film as well. So.
No, and I gotta say, when I was watching this with my son, props to him, he looked at me and he said, Mama, I think that this music score is very, it reminds me of Batman. And I was like, huh, I bet you're right. And I went and looked it up, and it sure is. Danny Elfman did both. It's amazing. He was like, the horns in this section are amazing. And I didn't know if I could be prouder. That's awesome, because I'm not a musical, like, I love music, but I do not understand like the tech behind that, all the science around music. And so I thought that was really interesting, that the score was so profound even to my son, who is, you know, a child. I really love the score on this, and I really like the songs that Madonna does. That Sooner or Later song that was originally done by Stephen Sondheim, it kind of floats throughout the entire film, and you can tell kind of Breathless Mahoney's mood depending on how she's singing the
How she's singing
song,
it,
which
yeah,
I
for
kind of
sure.
like that. So, like, she's really mad at Dick Tracy, and she's like, "Sooner or later, you're gonna be fine." And I was like, "Wow, this
Yeah.
is awesome."
She's wearing it all on her sleeve there. Yeah, Stephen Sondheim came in to do parts of the soundtrack or the score there as well for the, you know, for the jazz lounge act kind of sections there. So yeah, a really sort of neat thing. And if you look at the like reviews and ratings of this on IMDb and stuff, it's not particularly high. I think it's like 6.2 or something like that. So I think you either kind of vibe with the Dick Tracy vibe that this was going for, or you're kind of turned off by the kind of the quote unquote like rogues gallery of these criminals, right? Who are all pretty wacky and zany. You've got like Mumbles there, who doesn't say like any actual words throughout the thing, played by Dustin Hoffman. Absolutely incredible. They're like sweating them out underneath of this lamp. And my favorite little tidbit about Dick Tracy is that when Mumbles is in there, there's like a stenographer in there to take notes who just looks completely exasperated. That's played by Kathy Bates. And this was the same year she won the Academy Award for Misery. She was in Dick Tracy for like 11 seconds. Like Kathy
Yep.
Bates was just, you know, doing the good work there. And stuff like that. There's so many people like A-list people that just came in to be in this, and I don't know if it's because of the relationships that they would have had with Warren Beatty, some sort of similar love that they had for the character of Dick Tracy. But I mean, you're talking, you know, Glenn Headley, Michael J. Pollard, Charles Durning, Dick Van Dyke, Mandy Patinkin, we'd mentioned Paul Sorvino, we mentioned Henry Silva, William Forsythe, Dustin Hoffman, like I said, doesn't even like say like an actual like English word, and this is literally just mumbling. Catherine O'Hara is in this. It's so wild to me that this got made and it was made the way that it was, with the level of production that it was.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, the amount of, I don't know, just the in your faceness that this film took on for me as a child, it's really just emblazoned into that whole, I don't know, year or two of my life. I mean, it was everywhere. Everybody wanted to sing the Madonna songs. I do remember that. I can't imagine 10-year-olds singing that on a playground, but whatever. It was the 90s. But like the set direction and the decisions that they made around even like the details around the furniture that they used and the color context and how they're when they're all sitting at the table, some of the details around their costumes was just insane to me. They all look like this super like umptious wool and that are these bright colors. And it was just so, I don't know, we've not seen anything like it. And that's one of the things that I really loved about this from a technical perspective is there's a lot of detective films out there and there's a lot of comic book films out there, but this was really special. And I'm glad in a way that we haven't seen a remake of it because I don't know if it would be as good. And that's saying a lot from something that was not, I mean, it pokes a lot of fun at itself, right? Like Mumbles
Sure.
looks like a complete caricature of a person, and so does Lips. And they're supposed to, sort of, but you're not even mad that the makeup is so over the top. It's just this world that they live in, right? You're not, I don't know. So I would worry that if they ever tried to remake it, they would try to make it look too realistic, and
Yeah.
that would steal something from it for me.
Yeah, they would try to, yeah, they would try to like over grit it or something to that end, especially making it now, you know, in the year 2024. I do think that Dick Tracy as a character would work really well in some sort of like serialized fashion, so some sort
Oh,
of like
sure.
like series, you know, on Max or, you know, Netflix or Apple or something like that. I think would be a really great character to do that. But yeah, it would be hard to envision if they were making a new Dick Tracy film that it would have, you know, captured the same sort of essence today as it did in 1990 when they were really just so dedicated to, recreating the pages of those early comic strips. And I don't know, this is one that I've always really liked, Michaela. I don't know if you've watched it recently at all. Back in 1990, we were just kids. You basically watched whatever like eight VHS tapes you had over and over and over again. So, probably between the years of like 1990 to basically whenever the Jurassic Park VHS came out, I probably watched this like 100 times. And then I don't think I've watched it again since then, but it was amazing to go back and watch it, for sure.
No, same. I hadn't seen it, and I was surprised that you couldn't stream it anywhere. Sometimes, full disclosure, listeners, sometimes Brian will give me shtick because I will pick a movie that like you can't get. I'm looking at you, French Kiss. Still can't find that film. So sorry if you hadn't if you hadn't seen it. You're out of luck there. But this one, I was so happy to revisit. And it's probably been 20 years since I've seen it, at least. I mean, a long time. It's been a really long time, but it was so good. I thoroughly enjoyable. So if you've not seen it in a while, and this is making you itch to go do it, it's available for rent on like Apple or I think Prime, almost anywhere you can go and rent it, or buy it. And it's a good time. I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. It is a good time. And you know what else is a good time, Michaela? That is making a Tommy Gunn fizz from Two Crumbs Up. That was a really good one. And it was really good to have that and watch this film again, going back to our childhood last night when I was revisiting it. So let us know if you watched Dick Tracy back when it came out. If you had one of those cool watches, I'll be jealous of you. Let me know that. Let us know what you thought about Dick Tracy and let us know what you thought about the Tommy Gunn fizz. If you've got pictures of a cocktail, send them our way. You can do that on our social medias. It's on Instagram and X and Threads and Blue Sky at Drink the Movies and on Facebook.com/Drink the Movies. If you want to see pictures of our Tommy Gunn Fizz, if you want episode recaps about Dick Tracy, links to the merchandise shop or to the Patreon, you can find that on our website, www.drinkthemovies.com. Speaking of Patreon, we appreciate our patrons over there so very much. If you want some bonus content, bonus episodes, hangouts, all that good stuff, that is patreon.com/drinkthemovies. And the best way to make sure you're getting all of the best Drink the Movies stuff going on, that's to have us subscribed on your podcast feeds. Michaela, where can they do that?
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, anywhere where your rectangle tells you to listen to podcasts, we're probably there. So whatever you're listening to right now, there is a button that you can press. It's a subscribe button, and I hope you press it. And if you're really liking what you're hearing, leave us a five-star review. Send all of this out to your friends on social media. It is really amazing that we're able to do this this job that we love so much, and it is only because of you listeners. So thank you so much. We have merchandise that you can buy now, Brian. You should tell them all about that because it's awesome. We're not just saying that, like the products are amazing, and they happen to say Drink the Movies on them, which is kind of cool. So
That's right. Yeah, you can visit our merchandise shop. It's drinkthemovies.square.sites. We've got a bunch of stuff up on there, including a very comfortable zip-up hoodie. I'm a big fan of that. We got hats. We got some drinkware and some more stuff coming every couple of weeks as we get in samples and make sure that they are up to snuff so we can get them on the site. So definitely check that out if you're interested in supporting the podcast. That's a great way to represent us out in the wild, and we love to see that.
we sure do. We sure do. Well, Brian, I think, are we almost done? I think we're done.
I think we're
We
done.
put a pin in Dick Tracy.
We put it a pin in Dick Tracy. Absolutely. So that was a really fun one. Let us know again your thoughts on Dick Tracy. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time on
Drink
Drink
the
the
Movies.
Movies.
Oh, go suck an egg.
He's so good.
It's going to be my kid's favorite comeback from now
That's
on.
right.
Great.
I love he's like, I hate broads. And Tessa's like, I hate them too.
Especially when they look like Madonna.